So today we're happy to welcome to the program Dr. William Tollefson. And Dr. Tollefson is the Vice Chair of Emergency Medicine and Urgent Care for South Shore Health. Also, Dr. Peter Chow, Primary Care Physician for South Shore Medical Center here in Quincy. So I want to switch over to our gallery view here so folks can see everybody. And welcome, doctors. Thank you very much for taking part in the conversation. Really appreciate it.
Glad to be here.
Thank you for having us.
No, it's our pleasure. I thought this would be a good opportunity to chat just a little bit about what South Shore Health is doing during this pandemic, especially now with the vaccine rollout. And in particular, some questions that a lot of folks have asked me about the vaccine that I'd like to relay on their behalf, as well as questions that I have as well. So Dr. Tollefson, maybe if I could start with you and just to ask, first of all, how is South Shore Health handling the vaccine rollout?
So the vaccine rollout has been a little bit rocky at times, but we decided to address the rollout of the vaccine from a systems perspective, focusing on efforts to vaccinate as much of our community as possible, those who were in the right cohort to receive the vaccine. Obviously, that started with first responders, healthcare providers, and I think many people know South Shore Health employs about 6,000 people, a large employer on the South Shore. And we started with our frontline providers, but there's also a significant number of healthcare providers in the community that are not a part of South Shore Health, primary care physicians, dentists, for example, other healthcare providers. So we wanted to make sure that we were able to provide vaccination to all the healthcare providers in our community. So while we did employee clinics at our hospital, we also set up a vaccination clinics at the Health Express locations for the cohorts, starting with the healthcare providers, dentists, allied health professionals. And then as more and more opportunity came about, we were able to get more vaccine and we're opening it up to the older populations. Initially, we were then able to continue the process of vaccinating patients at Health Express outside of the hospital. The hospital continued to do employee clinics, but we offered vaccination at the Braintree and Kingston locations for 75 plus, two or more comorbidities within the health system, and then have been able to use those locations as well for other clinics as well. We also have a mobile integrated health program at South Shore Health, and I think, Joe, we spoke about that at another program, which is essentially a program that uses paramedics in a non-emergency setting. And the Mobile Integrated Health Program has been incredibly valuable in the vaccine efforts and has been used to vaccinate in partnership with our community, with local boards of health, with local housing authorities, as well as elder services. Have done pop-up clinics at senior centers, have gone to various buildings and have vaccinated folks there. Even had a drive-through location at the town of Norwell at one of the firehouses there. So very successful program, getting to people in their homes who otherwise wouldn't have been able to get vaccinated. So that's been a great resource. Overall, the whole program and the whole thought processes here is if we could do a kind of a hub location where we could try to get as much vaccine out to people as possible. Almost a large scale type vaccine program, and then used Health Express locations and the MIH service as a spoke model, a hub and spoke model. Unfortunately, because of the vaccine availability, we were just never able to really ramp up a hub location per se. We have plans that we could engage to do that, obviously vaccine dependent. And our hope is that there'll be a lot more on the market or available to us from the state very soon.
Right. According to the governor and President Biden, that will be the case very soon. New schedule was rolled out just yesterday. So I know a lot of folks are eager to see that. Dr. Zhao, what are you seeing in the Quincy office?
Quincy office, right now, we're now having the vaccine in our primary care office, but we're trying to bring the vaccine to the Health Express sites in Quincy. And I think this program just started this past weekend. We were able to arrange a pop-up clinic in our Quincy location, House Express, and that is in coordination with our local nonprofit organization, the Quincy Asian Resource Incorporated. And basically, South Shore was able to provide enough vaccines for 102 patients to be vaccinated, and we just did the South Shore provided the staffing, and the Quincy Asian Resource, they provided the community outreach. The goal is to catch the people who are essentially falling through the crack. You know, as you know, the Quincy, we have a large immigrant communities, and a lot of them, especially elderly patients, they often cannot drive, or they have limited English speaking abilities. So for them to navigate the registration sites and finding vaccines, sometimes even transportation can be an issue. So we're designed to catch those people that's most vulnerable. And then I think the response this past weekend was wonderful. It is my goal to be able to do that more often on a more like larger scale, but I think that's the beginning. Yeah.
We have heard stories about communities of color, older folks being hesitant to get the vaccine out of safety concerns. Are you seeing that at all?
I think it's improving. During the beginning of the vaccine rollout, there was definitely a lot of hesitations, even my parents sometimes. I think like as they are seeing more and more their families, their friends, and getting vaccinated, they are hearing more from the providers like us. The more information they receive, the less hesitance they're showing. So I think it's improving, but there's still a long way to go.
Have you yourself been vaccinated, Doctor?
Yes, I was vaccinated literally the week when the Pfizer vaccine rolled out.
And any problems, reaction to it at all?
I think after the second dose, I did have some headache, and I think I took some Tylenol. And after that, it was fine. It was like one day.
Sure.
I think the benefit, the knowing that you're protected and you're, and not only yourself, but also people around you, your family members, is that gives you a lot of comfort.
Yeah. How about yourself, Dr. Tollefson? Have you been vaccinated?
I have been vaccinated. I was fortunate enough to be in one of the first waves as an emergency physician to receive the Pfizer vaccine. And I really didn't have many symptoms. It's interesting talking to colleagues who received it during that time. Some folks had mild symptoms like Dr. Zhao did. Other folks had maybe more exaggerated, but it was very self-limited. It was self-limited. It was somewhat anticipated. You take some Tylenol and you feel better. So I think a risk benefit overall was absolutely worth it.
Yeah, there were initially some even reports among healthcare providers that were hesitant to get it. Have you heard that among your colleagues?
Oh yeah, I mean we had several who were somewhat hesitant. I think. Remember, we have a 6,000 colleagues, many women of childbearing age, some pregnant, right? And so there were those concerns as well. Are pregnant, planning to get pregnant, other folks who are on more of a compromised point in illness or what have you. I think as time went on and we saw more and more people vaccinated, we saw that we really weren't seeing these anaphylactic reactions or allergic reactions that we were hearing from initial reports in Europe, started seeing more and more guidance from American College of Gynecology, for example, or other, the AMA, and our oncology colleagues, Dana-Farber, saying, you know, even though you are immunocompromised, maybe getting chemotherapy, again, you know, the risk benefit on this is you might have some symptoms, you might have a little bit more exaggerated symptoms, but if you're vaccinated, it's going to be much better than if you get COVID.
What can you tell us about kind of the effectiveness of the vaccine? I mean, the big question everybody wants to know is, once I'm fully vaccinated, am I good to go? You know, can I get rid of the mask? Can I go to parties? Can I resume life? What are you telling them?
You want to, and you want to feel bulletproof, but we don't know perfectly well yet if you could be an asymptomatic carrier. We also know that the studies, when they did these studies, the endpoints of the studies were, did you get COVID? Did you not get COVID? If you got COVID, did you get serious COVID? Did you have to be hospitalized? Did you end up in the ICU? Were you intubated? Did you die? So there were these endpoints that, the goal of these vaccines was obviously to prevent you from getting the disease. But quite honestly, a successful vaccine program would also have said, hey, it's going to prevent you from having severe disease. Mm. Or morbidity, mortality. So those are the things that we're hashing out. And as we get further along into this, we're going to get more details. I mean, my father got the vaccine. He was so excited. He was, oh, great. Now I can go back to the gym. I was like, Dad, I think it's not quite there yet.
Well,
everybody wants to get back to normal.
That's of course. Yeah. That's the ultimate goal. Of course, it's going to be a process. Herd immunity is the catchphrase, I guess. Is that kind of where we need to be before quote unquote normal returns?
Yeah, I think, quite honestly, Joe, right now it's a foot race. It's a foot race between vaccinating people and the variants.
Mm.
And if we can outpace the variants with vaccination and achieve that herd immunity, we'll be able to eliminate variants. And, thankfully right now, the variants that are out there, the vaccines are relatively effective against. But the fear is that a different variant could be less effective. So that's why the charge to get as many people vaccinated as possible.
Sure. Dr. Zhao, I'm curious, you as a family physician, see a lot of children. And as I understand it, children are not now eligible to be vaccinated. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah. That's another reason why we should still do our best to minimize transmission. You know, I have been vaccinated, but my children have not. They are currently doing remote learning. Mm. And after the school is fully opened, and then I expect them to go back to school. And how to keep the transmission in school at the minimum. And then that is a big question. And I think there's a lot of questions need to be answered. I hope the vaccines for children can be approved soon. But of course, I also want them to be a very thorough, very thorough study to prove their safety. And until herd community can be achieved and our transmission rates is to the point of essentially minimal, and I think we should all practice masking, washing hands, still avoiding large group indoor activities. And I think within reason, I think outdoor activities, and those are great as the weather warms and our transmission decreases, but we should all practice common sense and then protect ourselves and our people around us.
Well, it's a good point. You know, you mentioned new cases. We're still seeing, at least here in Massachusetts, between 1,200, 1,500 new cases a day. The positivity rate is coming up just a little bit. We're still seeing, unfortunately, deaths. So COVID is still with us. And are you seeing it in your practice as well?
Our clinic at this point, we're not seeing basically COVID symptoms because we're trying to eliminate transmission in the clinic. Uh-huh. And then those COVID symptoms are at this point be seen by in the more like in the urgent care and setting. However, we do have the plan of including COVID-like patients in this clinic, but that involves a whole new set of screening process and room cleaning and staff training. And this is something we're working on.
Sure. Yeah. Curious, Dr. Tollefson, how important is COVID testing still today?
Yeah, it is probably just as important, if not more important today. As we see the incidence of the disease decrease, you know, we're doing a much better job as a whole community, to keep it in check. We're not having the rampant outbreaks we had in our nursing facilities. Our really high-risk patients are being protected. We're very good with PPE, and now we have great testing. It was, you know, Thanksgiving, it was free-for-all on testing, and there wasn't really a whole lot. We have ample supply now. And so for influenza-like illness, COVID-like illness, we are continue to offer testing. It's at the Health Express locations, we do same-day molecular testing of patients. You can get an appointment by going to our website, southshorehealth.org/healthexpress. And we're able to do same-day rapid molecular-based testing to identify patients who may have COVID, who might not know it because you're asymptomatic or might have been exposed. We've continued to do a fair amount of testing for travel. So those are still very important to keep to stop the spread, quite honestly, and to protect our community.
It may be too early to know this yet, but have you had any inclination as to whether or not this will be a yearly vaccine that we'll have to get?
You know, I don't know if it's going to be a annual vaccine. I mean, we might end up being, an annual booster, like a flu shot. We know that Moderna, for example, is currently making vaccine against some of the variants.
Hmm.
So that might be an indication to us that this might be a booster thing. I honestly think it's probably safe to say at this point is COVID's not going away. I think it's not just going to disappear. And it's going to be a part of our daily lives moving forward. I'm not saying it's going to be, full on masks and things for a long time, but I think we're going to have, moving forward, that we'll have a seasonal COVID event, and it's going to be like a flu season, and we'll be mostly immunized. So it'd be, less severe illness. I can't see working in the emergency department, entering a room of a patient who presents with respiratory distress, not wearing an N95 from now on, quite honestly. So I think we're going to be dealing with it for a while.
And yeah, it's changed our lives inexplicably in so many ways, including the way we're communicating right now. Are you utilizing telehealth in your practice more?
In the primary care clinic, yes, we do. And then especially for a patient who we suspect to have COVID symptoms, yes, we do essentially telehealth only. And then we do the COVID testing as much as possible to eliminate the possible transmission. But I guess it'll be more difficult in the emergency department.
Yeah, I would think so. In that case, it's talk about frontline workers. That's Tollefson, Dr. Tollefson, that's right where you are on the front lines every day with this.
Yeah, but we also, we're using telehealth with our MIH platform.
Oh, sure.
Again, the paramedics are in the community and they're seeing patients with COVID. We actually have a number of patients on service right now who have COVID who get a daily visit from a paramedic to get a remdesivir infusion.
Oh, okay.
And to get regular evaluations and medications as needed. And then they are able to telehealth with a member of my team to have real-time involvement. It's actually a pretty unique program where they can telehealth with a provider.
Mm-hmm.
And the provider can say, I think we need to give them a NEB. And they have a NEB right there. Why don't we draw some labs? They can draw labs. We can get a mobile imaging evaluation, a chest x-ray. So it's quite robust. And sometimes I wonder, you know, what can they do that I can't do, that I can do in the emergency department that they can't do? It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, well, you have to bring it to them, right? Is the best way to do it. Question about the two-dose vaccines, Moderna and Pfizer. Is the second dose the same strength as the first dose? Do you know?
Yeah, the second dose is exactly the same.
Oh, okay.
The same vial. It's the same. It's the same dosage. It's the same everything. It's just provides a secondary immune response.
Okay. And then after that second dose, how long until you're considered fully immunized?
You know, it's probably going to be about, you know, everyone's a little bit different, but within 2 weeks, I'd say, you know, you start developing antibodies. Vaccine, what it does is it introduces a messenger RNA into the cell of the spike protein. So the cell then makes just the spike protein, which the body identifies as being foreign. And subsequently, your body then develops antibodies to that. So in the event that you actually have actual COVID, not just the protein, mm-hmm. Your body says, hey, that's foreign and I'm gonna kill it. So it takes about 2 weeks. You know, that's a generalization, but probably a good rule of thumb.
Yeah. Another question I've been asked is if I've had COVID and recovered, do I need to get vaccinated?
Yeah, still need to get vaccinated. The passive immunity that you probably received from having COVID, you most likely generated antibodies and antibodies to various proteins and likely the spike protein. Those antibodies, that immune response wanes over time. And again, a generalization, but probably, 3 months, 90 days or so, it would wane. And we're still not fully aware of what titer, right? What level of antibody provides protection for you. You can come into Dr. Chow's clinic and you can get a hepatitis antibody test to see if you're immune to hepatitis after you got your Hep B series of vaccination or your varicella or chickenpox titer. So that says, hey, I can go to college because I got the chickenpox vaccine and now I'm immune because I have this level. We don't know what that level is for COVID yet.
Right. No, I know. All these questions I'm asking are a lot of unknowns because it is new. It is the novel. Right. Coronavirus, right? That alone was a learning experience to find out that coronaviruses have been around with us for eons, but this is a brand new one.
That's right. Yeah. You know, and I think it's just amazing to talk about this is completely novel virus and to have four vaccines soon on the market to treat it within less than a year. It's in my mind, one of the greatest scientific achievements of my generations, of my time. I consider it like Sputnik. It's really remarkable, and I think it's important to highlight that.
I think you're right. I think that gets overlooked sometimes. We take things for granted, especially in this country with so many resources available. But especially for doctors like yourselves, this must really represent great hope going forward for treating other, serious illnesses with this type of technology.
It is. It's the RNA virus RNA vaccine is not completely new, but this is the first one that's worked. They were studies at doing it for Ebola and things like that. But quite honestly, I think in the emergency department and in urgent care where we do so much testing. There's always this, do I have COVID? Oh my God, what does this mean? Who do I need to call? And this unknown, am I going to get sicker? And through these clinics and with the vaccine available, it's just a totally different mindset of just providing this hope to patients. And these celebrations we see when people get their vaccines and the selfies they're taking and just it's a real ray of hope and it's just great to see. It's completely opposite of what we've been dealing with for the past year.
Yeah. Dr. Zhao, you
I absolutely agree with
patients as well.
Yeah, absolutely agree with that. And I've been speaking to so many people during their vaccination clinic, and afterwards they're planning for what they're going to do their next summer. They're planning for the trip they're going to visit their friends or grandchildren. So I always warn them, you know, practice, you know, still wearing masks and wash your hands. But there are definitely opportunities that's open to people that have not been available to us during the past 1 year. That is definitely a ray of hope that,
You know, the one thing I wanted to ask Alice, both of you, is mm-hmm. is we heard early on two of the symptoms of COVID are loss of taste and smell. Do you know, has there been any research into that as to why that was, how long that lasts, what that might be able to teach us in the future?
We see a lot of those symptoms. I mean, that those symptoms can linger on for weeks and months. Mm. And unfortunately, at this point, I am still not exactly clear on what causing it. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if my colleague have other explanation.
I can tell you the our infectious disease colleagues and our colleagues in neurology have been looking at this quite closely. You know, does the virus cross the blood-brain barrier? Is the loss of taste or smell indicative of potential neurologic sequelae later post-COVID? It's not entirely clear, mm-hmm. but you know what I can say is we do absolutely see a post-COVID type syndrome.
Okay.
Of lingering symptoms, waxing and waning, sometimes more severe. Fatigue and in general general symptomatology that, you know, it's more of a syndrome, a complex of symptoms. It's not completely identified what's causing it or if anything at all. But it's something that's actively being researched and monitored, particularly by the neurology and infectious disease colleagues.
Yeah, again, more questions than answers right now, certainly.
That's right.
Anything else you'd like to leave with folks right now about South Shore Health's involvement with COVID?
You know, I think you know, we're still actively testing. I think testing is, as I mentioned before, is a key component of staying safe. And we are doing everything we can to get as much vaccine in arms in our community, working closely with the boards of health, working closely with elder affairs, housing authorities. And our hope is in the next months to come, as we get more and more vaccine, that we'll be able to really ramp up efforts. Stay close to our website and stay close to your physicians and monitor the state website to get vaccinated, because I think it's middle of April, Patriots Day. It's going to be everyone can get it. So make sure you get it. And after that, we'll have more information about children. There's ongoing studies in the 12 to 16 and then even younger now. We'll see where that goes.
Yeah. I mean, one thing we haven't talked about either is the whole emotional impact of what this pandemic is going to have on people going forward for many, many years. Dr. Zhao, anything you'd like to add?
Well, my job is to work on getting as many as vaccines as I can to our local community. We here at Quincy, we have a very diverse community. If this pandemic teaches us anything, we need to help each other and protect each other. And then hopefully by this summer, we have a whole new way of life.
Again.
Yeah, again. Old way of life.
I think it'll be a combination of the two going forward
from
here on out, for sure. I want to thank you both. Really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you about this. And if we can do anything more here at QAVT to get information out to the community, please reach out to us. We'd be happy to do it.
Thank you. Dr.
Tolleson, you are muted.
I was just saying
thank you. Can't end a Zoom call without saying you're muted.
Exactly. Oh,
man. But thank you. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Oh, a shameless plug. Dr. Zhao is accepting new patients at Quincy.
There you go.
Yes, I am.
All right.
Thank you very much.
We're happy to help put that out there. All right. Thanks again. Be well.
Thanks, Joe.
You're welcome.
Have a good day. Bye-bye.